This morning we're going to continue and conclude our critique of the Big Bang Theory. I know some of you found it a little bit difficult last week, but the point I want to get across for those who are less scientifically minded is that the theory really doesn't work. But there's a reason why they continue to hold on to it. And so I just want to read something here for you before we begin our critique. And it's in a little helpful book called Atheism Remix by Albert Mohler, who is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And he says, concerning the secularism of our world, especially in Europe and filtering into Canada and the United States, he says, perhaps the most insightful philosopher to have considered this is Charles Taylor. His massive work, A Secular Age, is both bold and a rather humble and honest work. Taylor has given attention over the decades to the secularization of society and to what it means to live in a secular age. And what he does is he defines that there are three historical periods in recent history. He said, first, there was once a time in which it was impossible not to believe, that is, in God. If you move back before the Enlightenment into the medieval period and beyond, it was virtually impossible to find a person who did not believe in God, or at least who did not assume that belief in God was absolutely necessary in order to make sense of the world. Believing in God was crucial to understanding why the sun was there in the morning and the moon and the stars at night. God was an integral, inseparable part of society's worldview. It was impossible not to believe because there was no other explanation. There was no other theory, no other rival worldview that could explain all that human beings experienced. The second phase Taylor describes is when it becomes possible not to believe. The Enlightenment becomes the grand opening for this. For even though it remained for most people still impossible not to believe, the great epistemological turn to the subject meant that the possibility of non-belief suddenly emerged. The individual himself became the center of meaning, and thus God was no longer understood to be the sovereign subject, but rather the object of study. And like any other theory, one must take him or leave him. Taylor suggests that we have now entered a third stage of intellectual development. This is the most important part. Having moved through the time in which it was impossible not to believe, through a time in which it became possible not to believe, we have now arrived at a situation in which, for the elites especially, it has become impossible to believe. If you compare the first stage and the third stage, an absolute reversal has taken place. In the first stage, there was no rival explanation for any reality, for life, for the past, for the present, or for the future, other than Christianity. But now it is the opposite. Now there are not only alternatives to the biblical worldview available, but these alternatives are declared to be superior. Indeed, if non-belief was an oddity in the first stage, so much that it was considered eccentric and even dangerous, in the third stage, it is theism that is considered eccentric and dangerous. Society has gotten to a point, especially among the intellectual elites, especially those in European institutions, where the belief in God is considered eccentric and dangerous. And therefore, God is not even allowed to be in the conversation. He's not even an option. They would rather believe that aliens seeded life on this earth, or that the universe came into existence from nothing, than believe that there's an eternal God who created the universe. That's not an option. It's not a consideration. Anything else goes before that. How strong is the case for the Big Bang Theory? If this is the standard theory that people believe in, and therefore they don't need God anymore, there must be some awful powerful proof for this theory, which is taught as fact in our educational systems. It's not taught as a theory anymore. It's taught as an absolute fact. Well, we mentioned, and we'll just do a little bit of review, that there were three different pillars for the Big Bang Theory. There was cosmic expansion, which means the universe, space itself is expanding. And they say, well, if it's expanding, then if you go back in time, it must have been smaller. And if you go back in time enough, then you come back to time zero. You come back to a point where they call the singularity, when all the matter and energy and space in the universe was in an infinitely small, infinitely dense particle. The singularity. And so they say, well, this is proof. The universe is expanding. Therefore, it must have been smaller and smaller and smaller till you get back to the singularity, that point. The second one was the abundance of the light elements. In other words, they say that the theory predicted that the universe would be made up of 99.99999% helium and hydrogen. And then there's a few other small elements there, lithium and deuterium, that they believe that the universe was made from. But it actually didn't. You could stick in anything in the mathematical equations and come up with the Big Bang Theory. You just have to adjust it. And in fact, it wasn't even a Big Bang proponent who actually came up with it. It was somebody else who, to his dying day, said that the Big Bang was impossible. Sir Fred Hoyle and some others figured out the constitution of the elements in the universe and said, that doesn't prove the Big Bang at all. And in fact, the modern forms of the Big Bang Theory, they knew the abundances of the light elements, so hydrogen, helium, before they even had the model. And then the cosmic microwave background radiation we mentioned, which is basically, if it's an explosion, then there's some remaining elements from it. And they believe that that they can actually go back and figure out what it was. And this is the actually only the clear prediction that the Big Bang Theory made. They predicted its existence before they so-called discovered it. So the prediction was made before it was found in 1964, published in 1965. The problem is there is some data that's coming out now that's actually saying that this microwave radiation, microwave is just a type of light. It's a certain frequency. And the problem is we don't know for certain that it's actually coming from the background. A lot of the information is actually suggesting it may be a local effect. So it may be coming from the background, but we don't know. And some of the key things that should be there aren't. And I mentioned some of them that are a little more technical. But the point I want to say is, if these are the three pillars, and none of them is solid evidence, really? Now we're going to see it gets much, much worse. Big problems with the Big Bang. Not only does their so-called key elements not work, but they can't explain the missing antimatter. Now, what this means, these are the symbols for standard particle physics now. So what it means is that atoms are actually made up of smaller things. Okay? So everyone knows what atoms are, and they're made up of smaller things. And usually in school, they just tell you they're made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons. Protons and neutrons are made up of smaller things. You've probably heard the word quarks before. Well, they're actually made, protons are made of three different quarks, and they give them weird names like up, down, charm, weird things like that. But there are also all these other things. Leptons, so you've probably heard of neutrinos. So there's neutrinos, the bottom three green ones are neutrinos, the electron neutrino, the muon one, the tau one. Okay, so you have all these weird things that nobody understands. But what they do, how they figure this out is you've probably heard of particle accelerators. So they build these big, giant machines and they just smash particles together. And then they try to figure out what's there. And so they built a big, giant one in Switzerland called the Large Hadron Collider. Cost billions and billions of dollars to do it. And the little H there, they think that they've found it. It's called the God particle. It's the Higgs boson. They've been looking for this. But all of these things are supposed to have opposites. So this is matter, and there's supposed to be an opposite. So for an electron, there's an opposite, which is called the positron. For the neutrinos, there's antineutrinos. For protons, there's antiprotons. There's antineutrons. Everyone's supposed to have an opposite. However, almost all of matter in the entire universe is made up of matter, not antimatter. The Big Bang should produce 50% matter and 50% antimatter. That's all you need to know. Okay, this is, they can actually do this in a in laboratories right now. They can actually do this. And every single time, without exception, you get antimatter and matter. So if you get an electron, you get a positron every time they do this. Yet in the universe, there's no antimatter, just little. They figure maybe there's little bits in the centers of galaxies. But the only stuff on Earth is the stuff made in laboratories. So this is called the missing matter problem for the Big Bang Theory. Now, you don't need to know the details. All you need to know is this is a big problem because it's called quantum pairs. Every time you create these, they always come in pairs every single time. So if you get an electron, you get a positron. So there should be half and half. If they come in contact with each other, they annihilate each other. They cease to exist as matter and become pure energy. So the problem is they say, well, it's in different parts of the universe. But the thing is, since the universe is moving, things come in contact. They should see these gigantic explosions all over the universe, and they don't find them at all. So this is a big problem for the Big Bang. Next one is monopoles. Think of it this way. You know what a magnet is? And a magnet has a plus and a minus, or a north and a south pole. What happens if you cut the magnet in half? Do you get a north pole and a south pole? Well, if you remember science class, no, you get two magnets. The thing is, in the Big Bang theory, the forces hadn't come together. That is, the electric force and the magnetic force were two separate forces at the time. They hadn't come together to form the magnetic force, which is one force now. So there should be these giant particles that are called monopoles. In other words, they only have one pole, a north or a south. They don't have the other. Guess how many they find? None. They say they're so far away we can't see them. Really? They don't know. There isn't. If you follow the news, they actually just made one. So they actually manufactured one in a laboratory, but there's none naturally occurring, and there should be lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of these things, but there's none. So this is the missing monopole problem. What else is there? Well, there's also called the flatness problem. This has to do with the way that that the universe is working as far as expansion and contraction is concerned, whether it's expanding or getting bigger, or whether it's not moving at all. So they call it, it's either open, closed, or flat. So they picture, this is how NASA tries to picture it, and it's not very helpful, is it? They either say it looks like a globe, it looks like what they call a saddle, or it's like a sheet of paper. Well, it doesn't explain it very much. It actually goes by the Greek letter omega. And this has to do with the energy density versus gravity of the universe, so where they measure things. And what it means is that number one is the value of one becomes the key number. So you don't need to remember all this. All you need to know is that one is the key number here. If it's less than one, it has one effect. If it's greater than one, it has another. If it's equal to one, it has another. So in one scenario, the universe expands really fast, and it spreads really, really, really fast, and you end up with nothing. If it's small, then what happens is the universe comes into existence, gone. It just contracts almost instantaneously. If it's equals to one, it means the universe will go out, it will expand, and it will expand forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Now, they like that view in some regards, but there's a problem with it. It shouldn't be like that. The older the universe gets, it should move away from one. It either should be moving really, really, really quickly towards zero, or it should be moving really, really, really quickly towards infinity. It shouldn't be at one. It may start at one, but 13 billion years later, it should be nowhere near one. It should be moving either towards zero, towards infinity. The latest measurements, 1.02 plus or minus 0.02. That looks an awful lot like 1, doesn't it? This is called the flatness problem because it should not look like that. When they calculate the probability of that happening, this is the smallest number it's possible at. 10 to the 55th power. That means a 1 with 55 zeros after it. In probability theory, they generally say if something is a 1 followed by 50 zeros, it's theoretically impossible. They're actually saying the number is probably more like 10 to the 60th power. Every time you go up 1, you're multiplying by 10. So 56 is 10 times larger than this. So this is called the flatness problem because it should not look like this at all. And yet their measurements are showing that basically it's 1. And that shouldn't happen at all. Okay, you don't need to remember the details, but just remember that they're missing any matter, they're missing monopoles, and it shouldn't look, the universe shouldn't be looking the way it does. The horizon problem I mentioned last week is the fact that when the universe exploded, the idea is that because it exploded faster than the speed of, because it exploded the way it did, and the radiation was trapped. Okay, for about 300 to 400,000 years, all the light and the radiation was trapped. It couldn't just flung out. The problem is the universe was expanding and expanding and expanding. And the idea is that the universe is probably somewhere between 80 and 100 billion light years across. So that means if we're in a center position, we're looking in that direction, we're like 40 billion light years that way and 40 billion light years that way. But they come up with this thing, the cosmic background radiation. They say, ha, here's evidence for the Big Bang. Yet it shouldn't look that way, according to the theory, because if light can only travel at the speed of light and the universe is only 13 billion years old, how did the stuff that is now 40 billion light years away mixed with the stuff that's 40 billion light years away there, if you've only had, you have to traverse 80 billion light years and you've only had 13 billion. You're nowhere, anywhere near that. The idea is that the temperature is supposed to be the same everywhere, and the only way to do that is for every part to mix with every part so you get the same temperature. So you stick an ice cube in your coffee, the stuff closest to the ice cube cools down first. It takes a little while for everything to get to the same temperature. And the same thing with the universe. So this is called the horizon problem. And so they got to try to figure out how to fix that. Because everything, there should be hot and cold spots everywhere. But there isn't. In fact, the temperature is the same everywhere to 1 to the 100,000th of a degree. Next problem is stars and galaxies. Let me explain this one. According to the Big Bang Theory, all you should get is an expanding cloud of dust. That's it. So you get, all you get is gas particles out in the entire universe. That's it. Because all you got is hydrogen and helium, and, well, basically that's all you get. Now, you put helium in balloons, right? That's real hard stuff? No, it just floats up. It's just a gas. That's all you get. Now, we're going to see way down the road that you get other problems, too, such as the creation of the galaxy, solar system. But according to this theory, somehow you have to get stars and galaxies, because basically that's what the universe is. It's space and then the stuff in it, which is basically stars and then planets and things like that. How do you get stars out of an expanding cloud of gas? Well, here's a huge problem. You need somehow to get the gas to compress to the point where all that hydrogen and helium gets to a certain critical density where all of a sudden its own gravity will take over and it'll pull itself together. And that density will actually create so much heat that it'll actually set itself on fire. It starts a nuclear reaction that will go on just like our star, our sun does now. The problem is, how do you get it to collapse? All the theories, you need stars to make stars. So how do you get the first star if you need stars to make stars? Because somehow you have to get that thing to go like this, and there's nothing there to do it. Ordinary gas pressure makes things expand. So how do you get it to contract? Well, they say, well, it's on gravity. Well, no. Gravity is the weakest of the forces, and it won't overcome gas pressure. You need something to help it. So they want is a star to explode, a supernova, and the shock wave coming in is going to jam everything together. But if you don't have a star to make the first star, you can't use that. You don't have anything else but gravity and the dust, the gas particles. There's other problems with it, too, that you have to overcome. And one is the fact that when the dust, when it starts coming together, one, it increases the heat, which means it wants to push out again. So the density creates heat, which makes it want to expand. Also, when it comes together, it starts spinning a little bit. And when it spins a little bit, it pushes out. Okay, so it's got some dynamic problems with the motion, makes it want to pull out. Also, it has a little bit of magnetic force to it, which pushes out as well. How do you get it to work? Well, they just invent something called dark matter, and then they fudge some things and make it work. But it doesn't. They don't have anything at their disposal. In fact, it's at the point now where even Stephen Hawking, in his book, The Theory of Everything, is saying, oh yeah, by the way, we don't know how to make stars. So no stars, no galaxies. And by the way, they say the planets came from stars that exploded. So all the universe would be, given the assumption of the Big Bang to begin with, is an expanding cloud of gas. That's it. It's interesting. There's a brand new book by an astronomer at Harvard by the name of Avi Loeb. And it's just a book. It's supposed to be for us lay people on where the stars came from. And he's got this, all these things in dark matter and this did it and that. Meanwhile, just a few years before, he said, oh, by the way, and this was in a scientific book, in an article. He says, oh, by the way, at the fundamental level, we have no idea how stars are made. Yet the book that's for us says, oh, we know exactly how it works. No, they don't. But they have to come up with something because they don't believe in God. So here's just a few of the problems that we've listed so far. That they have no real good they have explanations, but none of them are really good. Ad hoc requirements. In other words, there are patches that they have to put in their theory to make it work at all. I mentioned last week that if you learned in school 30 years ago the Big Bang Theory, it would be different than the one nowadays. Before 1980, 81, there was no such thing as inflation. Now there's things called dark matter, dark energy. These are things that they have to put in there. So in order to get rid of the flatness problem and the monopole problem and have the microwave background looking all the same, they had to invent something called inflation. They actually, in several generations left from the original one. But an American physicist by the name of Alan Guth came up with inflation, which really means that the universe, the Big Bang wasn't big enough, so you needed a bigger bang. And it had to be one that was going much, much, much faster than the speed of light. It had to be going, the universe had to expand by like 100 trillion, trillion times in an instant. And the idea was that it smooths everything out. So it makes the temperature everywhere. It supposedly fixed the horizon problem because they're saying all the energy mixed before it happened. And then, woof, it just expanded at an enormous rate. Well, problems with inflation is, there's no evidence for it. None. Now, you may have seen that in the news back in March that they found proof, the smoking gun of the Big Bang Theory, that they've actually found the first actual physical evidence for the Big Bang. They found these certain type of gravitational waves, they say, that they found. Anyone hear that on the news? Okay. So they're touting it that now we've proven the Big Bang Theory. There's these telescopes in the South Pole that apparently found these things. The problem is, about a week later, some huge Big Bang fans came out and said, hold on a second here. We don't know where these are coming from. These could be coming from nearby sources because there's lots of things that produce these waves. So the media tells everyone that, oh yeah, by the way, we've now proven the Big Bang, which is kind of funny in itself, because if we've now proven it, does that mean before it wasn't proven? Meanwhile, for decades, they've been telling us it's a fact. Yet they're still looking for the first actual concrete physical evidence that such a thing even happened. Yet Lawrence Krauss and some others, and Lawrence Krauss is a misotheist. He is a God hater, a Christian hater. This man was interviewed in Australia and said that teaching kids religion is child abuse. This man believes in the Big Bang Theory. And he is dedicating his career to prove that it happened, that there is no God. And he and his researchers are saying, hold on here. We have no idea where this stuff's actually come from. Until we eliminate every possible source, we won't know that it's actually from the Big Bang. And by the way, guess what the chances of that are? Zilch. They can't eliminate everything. The only way you can... See, the problem is when they're now analyzing all this stuff, in order to properly analyze it, they have to assume their theory first. And then what they do is they just eliminate everything that doesn't fit their theory and say, oh, by the way, that's contamination and these sorts of things. It's all circular reasoning. Dark matter. Dark matter is, there's an interesting thing that happened many, many years ago. They couldn't explain by Newton's theory why Mercury went around the sun a certain way. So they couldn't figure it out, and the laws of motion and different things didn't fit. So what they did is they said, well, there was a planet behind the sun that we can't see. It's in perfect synchrony with the Earth. So it's hidden behind there, and it's throwing it off a bit. That was the planet Vulcan. That's why Spock has weird copper-based blood and stuff, because it's so close to the sun and things like that. So they had to invent a planet, some dark matter, which is matter that you can't see or detect. There's no way to know about it. Well, we have to invent this fudge thing to figure it out. Now they're doing that for the whole universe. They actually found out that there's a reason why it doesn't work. And then when Einstein came along and had his general theory of relativity, that's his theory to dealing with gravity, he figured out, oh, yeah, by the way, and they measured it and it fits perfectly. You don't need a planet behind there. You just needed new physics, because Newton's law of gravity only works to a certain extent. So now they have dark matter. There's way, way, way more dark matter supposedly in the universe than there is regular matter. Yet they can't see it or detect it. You'll hear stuff on the news that they said that they found dark matter. They haven't. In one of the most recent publications, an Oxford astronomer is now saying, Joseph Silk is saying, we need to spend more money and do more research because we need to find dark matter. He's saying, we haven't found any. And we need it, or else our theory doesn't work. Doesn't work at all. And if you want to know why they need it, ask me later and I'll try to explain some of it to you. But there may be some dark matter in the universe. There really may be. But the amount they need is ridiculous. Dark energy is like a force that's anti-gravity. And they need a bunch of this too. Yet there's no evidence for dark energy either. And in fact, what they're saying is now is that 96% of the stuff that makes up the universe is dark matter and dark energy. Everything else that we can actually see and test and these sorts of things is only 4%. So they're expecting us to believe that 96% of the stuff that makes the Big Bang work. Oh, by the way, we don't know where it is or what it is. Why are we believing in stuff like this? They're explaining unknowns by unknowns. Now, they're hoping to find some dark energy and well, and they're doing experiments, but none of them is working so far. Missing fuse. This is one where you need to be going at people with. What this means is, okay, let's assume the Big Bang happened. Okay, so you're coming back to a singularity. All the space, matter, time, energy in the universe is all in this little particle. Where did it come from? This is the one you need to focus on when you're talking to people, is because when you read all this stuff and they're explaining the Big Bang Theory, they're assuming something that's already in existence. They don't want to deal with the question of what happened before the Big Bang or what was there before it. So they have all these problems: antimatter, monopoles, flatness, horizons, stars and galaxies, ad hoc problems. Okay, let's assume all of them are true. What started the show in the first place? What lit the fuse? In fact, where did the stick of dynamite come from? Listen to this quote. Now, this is by an actual physics professor. Edward Tryon, writing in an article in Nature, which is the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, said, and this is back in 1973, actually everybody thought it was a joke until he told them he was serious. In answer to the question of why it happened, I offer the modest proposal that our universe is simply one of those things which happen from time to time. That's really scientific, isn't it? Now, I'll come back to it, but he's arguing is the universe a vacuum fluctuation. How do you get everything from nothing? That's the question. How do you get everything from nothing? Well, in a recent paper, this paper was published on a Cornell University hosts a whole server where physicists and other people submit their papers. It's called Archive. And most of them are published in the technical journals as well. But you can go and you can read all this stuff if you have the inclination. Did the universe have a beginning? Now, I don't know who Audrey Mathani is, but Alexander Vilenkin is one of the leading cosmologists on the planet. When he speaks, people listen. Stephen Hawking, a couple years ago, had his 70th birthday party, and Alexander Vilenkin was one of the lecturers at it, and he didn't give a very good birthday party because he and this other person had done massive amounts of research. Remember, all this stuff is math. It's what it is. It's just computers and simulations and things. But he's actually demonstrated that the main theories that are being used now, all of them demand that there's a beginning. And that's a problem. They don't want a beginning. They want some kind of eternal universe. But they've shown mathematically that all the theories, the main theories, all require a beginning period. Which now we have to ask the question, what happened before it? Because the thing is, if something has a beginning, something has to bring it into existence. If you have an effect, you need an adequate cause. Because they argue before the Big Bang, there was nothing. And by nothing, they mean nothing. The absence of everything. So if you have nothing, and then you have everything, how did you get from there to there when you don't have a sufficient cause? So if you leave with anything today, leave with this one. Where did it come from? They're now arguing for internal inflation. So they're saying this inflation thing, and it spouts multiverse. In other words, you have an infinite number of universes. They've actually proven mathematically that even that view requires a beginning. Okay, so our physicists in here, they call it geodesically incomplete. So what happens if you're running it backwards? They're hoping that lines will never touch. So it'll go back forever. Guess what? Every time they touch. Which means there has to be a beginning. Has to be. The universe cannot be eternal. Therefore, what caused the universe? Well, Stephen Hawking, who is the most famous scientist in the world today, he says, because there is a law like gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. By the way, this has three logical contradictions in it. At the beginning of his book, he actually says we need to get rid of philosophy, because philosophy is useless. Yet his whole book is philosophical in nature, not scientific, and he shows that he knows nothing of philosophy by putting three contradictions in one sentence. The universe will and must create itself from nothing? Okay, I'm not a physicist, but I at least have common sense. That's impossible. For something to create itself, it must exist before itself in order to make itself. That is a blatant contradiction which makes it impossible. Lawrence Krauss, who I mentioned before, who says that forget Jesus, thank the stars that they died for you because we're all made of stardust, wrote a book called A Universe from Nothing, and it was hailed as this wonderful work. And he argues that, going back to this view here, that we get a universe out of a vacuum fluctuation. Now, you're wondering what that is. This has nothing to do with Hoovers and beams and these sorts of things. A vacuum is something that isn't nothing. So they're arguing that you have, in other words, what they're doing is they're playing games with the word nothing. There's supposed to be nothing, which means nothing, not even a vacuum. But what they're arguing is that there was a vacuum in space, and it fluctuated, and it caused the Big Bang. Are you with me on that? So, nothing fluctuated and became the universe. Now, in order for something to fluctuate, it must have something in it. And a vacuum, as you can go and read quote after quote after quote on the internet, is not nothing. It's actually a sea of energy. And energy isn't nothing. Plus, in order for something to fluctuate, you have to have the laws in place. So there's a huge host of problems with it. That's why when this guy argued a vacuum fluctuation, people were laughing at him. Now, most of them are believing it now. So we supposedly get a universe for nothing. One scholar said it's the ultimate free lunch. The universe just, it shouldn't happen, but it did. We're here. This is the lengths they'll go, folks, to explain away God. Is it not more logical to believe an eternal, all-powerful God created everything? And yet you get somebody like Stephen Hawking and others who are trying to get around the problem, and they come up with this absurdity. So they obviously have no idea what Christians believe. They'll say, well, then what created God if God created it? Well, what Christian, Jew, Muslim believes that God was created? He's eternal. So we're supposed to believe that nothing fluctuated and became the universe. The problem is that, okay, this is how it works. I think I mentioned it to you before, but Einstein's favorite famous equation, E equals mc squared. The idea here is that energy can become matter. It just changes states. That's why you get this problem with the antimatter one, because when it does this, when energy converts to matter, it's always matter and antimatter, one of each. They always come out in pairs. So they're arguing that this vacuum, which has all this energy in it, which then you need to ask them, where did the energy come from? Because energy is something. And by the way, this whole thing has laws that govern it. So where did those come from? And that this thing fluctuated and produced so much energy that the universe came into existence. One, not only have you not gotten back to the problem of what the beginning actually was, but there's also a problem. When these things happen, these fluctuations, okay, just think of this. Energy all of a sudden converts to matter. Okay, and this works. They test this in the lab and everything. The problem is that the energy, when it converts to matter, it almost instantly goes back to energy. That's why they call it a fluctuation. It just goes poof, and then it goes back. The thing is, there's an inverse law with this, which means that the smaller amount of energy, or we could reverse it, say the smaller amount of matter that's produced, the longer the fluctuation lasts. If you have something the size of the entire universe, all that mass fluctuating, coming into existence at one time, then the length of time the universe would have lasted is larger than a 1 followed by 100 zeros. Now, that's in a negative, so it's 0.001 of a second. So the statement that people who deal with this say is that if the universe did pop into existence, nobody would have noticed because it would have lasted an infinitesimally small amount of time. So let's just do some quick review. There's no test, so you're okay. But the point I want to bring out here is that there's so many problems with this. It's like trying to scoop water out with a fishing net. You leave more behind than you take out. And so they have to add all these fudge factors to make it work. Now, they may solve some of these, but there's so many problems, and we haven't even got to all of them. Like, how do you get the Earth? I'm going to mention it. How do they get water on the Earth? They don't have an adequate explanation that why there's water on the Earth, let alone more than 70% of the Earth covered in water. Antimatter, monopoles, flatness, horizons, stars, all these things that are mathematical equations, inflation, dark matter, dark. By the way, there are alternate theories that can explain all these things without inflation, dark matter, and dark energy, but they won't give up their theory. They won't. And the theory cannot be defeated because they'll just keep changing the theory and changing the theory and changing it. This doesn't work. Okay, we'll just change it. Big problems with the Big Bang. That's an understatement. And yet there are a lot of Christians now that are trying to tell you that, yeah, the Big Bang's happened, but God's the one that caused it. Really? It doesn't work at all. The theory doesn't work, and it doesn't fit with the Bible because you get the wrong order of events. The Bible says God started with the earth, and it wasn't until day four that you got the sun, moon, and stars. Yet the Big Bang, you get stars, and by the way, it's not our sun, because our sun is at least a third generation star, not a first. The moon, they have no idea where that came from. Problem after problem after problem, yet it's tethered at fact. And kids en masse are believing this stuff. And they're leaving the church because of it. I don't expect anyone here to know, to memorize all the details of this. My point in doing all this is to show that even giving them the benefit of the doubt, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And if we would just communicate this to our children and our loved ones and things like that, then maybe more of them wouldn't be walking away and leaving churches. And churches by the thousands are closing down. And the number one reason is they see a conflict between science and faith. Yeah, there is. The problem is mainstream science is wrong because they're trying to explain away God. And it's the fool that says in his heart there is no God. So we went through this with 2 weeks. Next week, we're back into the text. So please come back. No more physics for a while. But please see clearly that the media is anti-God. And they're telling you all this stuff is fact, and it's not fact at all. Not even close. Like I said, they have some explanations from these, but they really don't work. They really don't work. They have to invoke things that don't exist to make the theory work. And when you listen closely, it's because they don't want there to be a God. And they come out and say this. When they start saying it's child abuse, and by the way, Lawrence Krauss isn't the only one that said this. Richard Dawkins has said the same thing. They do not want to believe in God and will believe in anything else. Listen, once you get rid of God, do you think you're going to be left with something coherent? You have to get a universe from nothing. And they're trying to say, well, there's multiverse, universe after universe after universe. There's actually a funny joke that people have said. That is, one scholar has said that inflation now demands a multiverse. In other words, inflation will go on forever and ever. So that's that hyper-expansion. And as it goes on, it's going to keep... It's like a universe generator. It's just going to make universe after universe after universe. And they say it's basically an infinite number of them, and each one of them is different. And so according to the theory, and Max Tegmark, who's an astrophysicist, said, we got to scrap it because of the conclusions it's bringing us to. But what it does is they're saying, okay, it makes everything philosophically possible now. Because on some universe, something is going to happen. The problem is, in one universe, it's going to say that God exists and that God wrote the Bible, and God in the Bible says that he only made one universe and he made it in 6,000 years. So they're saying now there's a philosophical problem with it, because on one of those universes, God exists. God created everything. And oh, by the way, God said he didn't do it this way, which means that the theory doesn't work because they can't prove it by experimentation. And so they're saying it's philosophy. And their philosophy doesn't work. It actually contradicts itself. Okay, I hope this was somewhat helpful. I'm looking more at the young people and parents and things to... But believe me when I say it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And we need to tell people it doesn't work rather than be part of the group that's just following the tune of the Pied Piper. Because that's what the world is doing. And people are leaving the church because they're willing to believe this rather than in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Now, let me end with this. They may come up with some fixes for this, but what I'm saying is when you look at the structure as a whole, it can't bear the weight of what they're trying to accomplish. That's why at the beginning, I used the idea here of a house of cards. Yes, those cards will stand, but at some point, it'll be overwhelmed by the force and it will collapse. And they're at the point now that it's a collapse, but they don't think it has. Because it can't bear the weight of all these things that they have to add to make it. Things that are unknown, unobservable, untestable. And so really it's a house of cards, and they make it look all neat and like it's standing and strong. But if you were to actually look at the real picture, it's already collapsed. It's already collapsed. Please, if you have any questions, let me know. I want this to be understandable. But at the same time, I'm trying to get through a lot of material. So, again, I hope it was helpful. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, the world is buying into the lie, trying to explain the existence of the universe, the existence of all life apart from you. They're willing to believe the absurd, the unimaginable, just to get rid of you. For they do not want to be accountable to God. Lord, help us to bring light to the darkness. Help us to be able to answer people's questions and to show them that what they're told is only a half-truth at best. Lord, I do pray that you would just use us mightily, and may we not be lazy Christians who are unwilling to learn things in order to be used of you. But Lord, may we be equipping ourselves for the work of the ministry, that Father, you might see fit to save souls through us. For Lord, this isn't about puffing ourselves up with information, but training ourselves, Lord, to be effective witnesses for Jesus. And if somebody has a legitimate question or concern, Lord, may we be able to answer it. Not casting pearls to swine, Lord, but casting lifelines to those who are drowning. Lord, may we see that there is much more to this life than just living and dying and earning a wage. But that, Lord, eternity is at stake. Souls are on the line. Lord, begin also maybe at the first point with giving us a heart for other people and their condition, and that we would see the desperation in them, Lord, as they're groping in the darkness and they're headed towards hell. Lord, we know we can't save, but that doesn't absolve us from our responsibility to be out there making disciples of people, to be telling them the truth. And Lord, and ultimately allowing the Holy Spirit to grip them. So Lord, may we be faithful to what you would call us to. In Jesus' name, amen.